look like that on the surface include everything and realize that it's all part of the teaching that includes the bus trip from hell. It includes discomforts, strange food that you are not used to. Bugs that you may encounter here or there, or other animals. And your physical body. Some of you are experiencing the limitations of that here. And whatever condition arises, inside or outside, it's part of your practice. One can live like that. At the moment I'm just saying make it part of your retreat here, where nothing is denied or resisted, including physical weakness, physical pain, or physical discomfort. Just relax into that. Only the condition of this moment. Otherwise, you may go home frustrated and say, I went to this retreat expecting to encounter spiritual liberation, the limitless, the transcendent and eternal, and all I encountered was sickness, strange food, bus trips from hell, bugs. That wasn't supposed to happen. Of course, you also encountered other things, but it's easy for the mind to focus only on that. In other words, limitations all around. And when you get home, you encounter the normal limitations of everyday life again. So here would be pointless to try and eliminate the limitations. We looked at it before. Use the limitations as the doorway. It's easy to forget. There's a little spider. Shh. On its journey somewhere. So every limitation becomes a doorway when you don't turn away from it, criticize it, blame it, judge it, good, bad, usually bad. So whatever it is, I put it like that in the book. Whatever this moment presents to you, accept it as if you had chosen it. That is a totally new way of living and totally contrary to the old conditioned consciousness. Accept this moment, no matter what it brings, as if you had chosen it. I am not saying that you did choose it. Maybe you did. If I say you chose it, that would require belief on your part. You can believe it or not believe it. And some of you would say, I definitely did not choose this. I know that for sure. So although in some New Age teachings you hear, whenever you come to a person who has read these books and been to workshops, and you come and say, this is what's happening to me, and or that's happening to me, they will ask, why did you manifest that? And then you already begin to feel a little bit guilty. Oh, I must have made some mistake somewhere. I manifested this. Not good enough yet. So I don't say you chose it. It's enough to say, as if, except, as if you had chosen it. Oh. And immediately, the limitation becomes a doorway into peace. That's the miracle. No matter what condition you surrender to, accept fully, that very condition takes you into deep peace. But if the condition is on the surface, appears on the surface, totally unacceptable, then the surrender would have to be correspondingly deep. The depth of surrender reflects the condition. So a little condition may be a discomfort in your stomach. A larger condition, you're confined to bed. Can't come to the talks anymore. You're missing out on the whole thing. And yet, here the surrender will have to be a little deeper. And then you can encounter conditions that seem dreadful on the surface. Nobody could accept that. An illness that immobilizes you forever, perhaps, as if I what the doctors say. Death of loved ones all around you. Loss of everything. Prison. And then the surrender, the yes to this moment, will be very deep. And so the peace that then comes, if you find that deep yes in the face of seemingly unacceptable conditions, and to some people the threshold of unacceptable isn't very high. It's they very quickly reach the unacceptable. Some of you may have a few times during this week reached the threshold of the unacceptable, and yet it wasn't that much, but the reaction was as if it were huge. Perhaps it was huge if you had used to a extremely comfortable existence. And this is why it has happened. Certain people who were faced with the unacceptable, even when they never have heard any spiritual teaching before, they entered the surrendered state of consciousness, and the yes arose in the face of the unacceptable. And yet yes had to be so deep that that peace, all the reactive structures of the egoic self collapsed in that one deep yes. And the peace then never left them. They dwelled in that eternal peace. Those were the first, thousands of years ago, the first spiritual teachers that arose. They didn't have teachers, because they must have started somewhere. The first spiritual teachers that arose were those people who were faced with the unacceptable, great suffering, and then a deep yes. The depths of that yes reflected the depths of the suffering and of the limitations that they encountered. And that was the shift. And then they, after a while, people came and said, there's something strange about you. I don't know what it is. I feel drawn. What is it that you have something that I don't have? I want that. And they said, well, I know. And then gradually some teaching started coming out of their mouths. A few pointers gradually. And later on, perhaps they had an insight into what had happened to them. And then the teaching says, you don't need to go to the depths of despair, to an extreme form of limitation or suffering. Surrender can happen as a voluntary yes. You don't have to be pushed into it by life, although eventually life would push you into it. Time. All that spiritual teachings do is they save time. By the grace of God. Otherwise it gets drawn out. Goes on and on. All the old patterns playing themselves out again and renewing themselves, including the pain body. So if you bring in continuous little acts of surrender in the face of relatively small limitations, then gradually you enter the surrendered state. With every yes, there's a deepening. With every yes, there's a weakening of the egoic mind structures. So everything is included. Whatever arises now is part of this retreat. And when you go away from here, is part of your spiritual practice. There's nothing that is not part of it. Oh no, not this. No, give me something else to surrender to. This one, no, I don't want. I need a more secure life situation so that I can start my surrender practice. And the mind saying, and this is also a subtle thing, I need to understand more before I can surrender. Please explain more about surrender. I haven't accumulated enough knowledge about it. Just one more question now about surrender. Oh, well, then the answer comes, But then, on the other hand, what about, of course, there's no end. Now, surrender is the doorway into presence. May I also suggest not only that you work with whatever happens, apply the yes, remember the beautiful statement by the Roman emperor Marcus Aurelius that I quote in the book. Marcus Aurelius was this very strange case of a wise man who has also had worldly power. It's very rare that these two go together, extremely rare. So he said in his beautiful little book that is now called Meditations, written 2,000 years ago, accept all that comes to you woven in the pattern of your destiny, for what could more aptly fit your needs? Whatever comes to you is woven in the pattern of your destiny, which is the pattern of the totality of the cosmos. It appears as the form that this moment takes. What could be better? What could more aptly fit your needs than that which comes to you woven in this pattern of the totality, which appears as now? And so whatever it is here, and if you cannot come to a talk, that will be greater for you than the talk, if you surrender into that condition. But then you can observe the complainer. I'm missing out. Here I am, spend all this money on this long trip, and here I'm in bed. It's not even comfortable. And the self-talk continues. It's even happened last year. We had a retreat in Costa Rica, and one person who had come from the other side of the planet to come to this retreat, halfway between where he lives and where Costa Rica is, he got arrested, and they put him in prison for 2 months. Later all the charges were waived, but he didn't know that then. That was his retreat. And it was better than the retreat in Costa Rica would have been. Far greater deepening happened. First, much more suffering than could ever have been generated even by the most uncomfortable retreat. And then, in the face of the suffering, surrender happened. And then he realized later, not immediately, that that was the best that could ever have happened to him. So that's this enormous power that is released through welcoming now. And then it becomes uncompromising. An uncompromising welcoming it has both a feminine and masculine aspect to it, that welcoming. The feminine aspect of welcoming whatever arises is what you sometimes see in statues of the Virgin Mary, Kuan Yin, perhaps also the arms like that, often the which is the feminine principle of embracing all. So that is one aspect of welcoming what is you have to become the one that is embraces all. You realize yourself as the field that allows this to be the space. And then welcoming also has a more masculine aspect, which is like that. It has the certain fierceness to it. Also, it is uncompromising, the yes to what is. The two combined, it seems impossible, but they merge into one. And with that you meet whatever arises in your life, with that gentle fierceness, you meet and face whatever arises in your life. And of course, it can only arise now. That's all there ever is. Whatever arises in this field, with that gentle fierceness, is embraced, received, met. And then enormous transformation happens. First, the entire state of consciousness shifts from resistance, ego, to complete openness, where the self, the one self, not the limited little mind-made self, that one consciousness then becomes free-flowing, so to speak. And it acts for you, speaks for you. Life unfolds. Life suddenly seems to carry you, where before you struggled against it, now you're floating, so to speak. It comes always as a surprise to somebody who learns to swim, that at first it's a great struggle to keep yourself above water. This is the egoic condition, so to speak. You're always struggling to keep your head above water. When is it ever going to end? I can't take any more. And then suddenly you realize that the water is actually quite friendly. It can carry you, and you can just breathe in, lie on your back, and you float. And just a few movements, and you become one with the water. You're no longer struggling against the water. The water becomes friendly. And this is how life can become, when the shift happens from the resistant state to the surrendered state, suddenly the universe is no longer experienced as hostile. In the egoic state, mostly, the universe is a place to be feared, and a place that you also hope someday is going to deliver to you what you need. Of course it won't. So it's the uncompromising yes. And so you don't need to be worried about thoughts, how do I get rid of mental noise? There's so much going on in my head. The uncompromising, yes, does it. Mental noise subsides. It has a certain momentum. For a little while it's still there, and then less. And the noise that's still there is no longer a problem. Just a little bit of mental noise occasionally, okay. But watch the deep-seated pattern of the mental noise, the deep-seated pattern associated with the egoic mind structures. They have enormous momentum behind them. Patterns of resistance. Watch particularly, there are two very important ones, and you will notice them very easily, as now that there's so much presence in you, you can notice how your mind operates unconsciously. Two very important aspects of the pattern, the resistance, the continuous resistance patterns of the egoic mind. And this is what usually creates so much suffering in relationships, so much friction and conflict, continuous source of conflict in relationships. Two main aspects of the resistance pattern is identification with mental positions and defensiveness. And you can watch that as you interact with people, how the arguments in your relationship, how many of them are to do with unconscious identification with positions of the mind that you identify with. It could be opinions, viewpoints, beliefs, ideas, perspectives, and there's an identification with this mind position as me. And then your partner has another position that conflicts with yours and identifies with that. Both are totally have their sense of self in their mental position. So the two things in relationships that usually positions, and often the two go together, the mental positions can become amplified by the pain body. Hell, it's called. So watch it, even in a simple discussion, a simple conversation, before you know it, you've put forward some position or belief or opinion or idea, and then the other person says, no, that's not how it is. And then you're beginning to defend yourself. This is the beginning of unconsciousness. It's nothing to do with you, but you believe it's you because you have identified with mind. And the moment you identify with a belief, an idea, any mental position, a perspective on something, now you have to defend, you have to fight for your very life. And it's unconscious. And you can see it everywhere. So to know, and especially as you interact with people, it's simply a position, it's a mental position. There's no self in it. It's just a perspective. And then comes defensiveness. It's totally automatic. Defensiveness comes in whenever your sense of self, which is mind-made, is threatened by something. Something somebody says. You did that. You didn't do that. You failed to do that. And you can see how automatically the self goes into protection and defense, and the enormous emotion that comes with that. And you go, if you feel the body, you feel it's totally contracted. I never said that. I never did that. You did. You are the one who is unconscious. What are you telling me? It's All you need to do is watch it in yourself. If the unconscious movement still operates, how quickly and automatic the process of defensiveness is. So you're defending yourself, but an illusory self. Part of that is the need to be right. Very closely associated with needing to keep your sense of self intact, because your sense of self is identified with a position of rightness. And so the spiritual practice is, on the one hand, to observe this as it arises, if you can, or you observe it just after it's happened, the whole episode is over, and then you say, oh, there it was again, okay. And then perhaps next time in the middle of it you can suddenly see it, that you are trapped in defending an illusion, put beautifully in the Course in Miracles, which says, whenever you become defensive about anything, know that you have identified yourself with an illusion. Whenever you become defensive about anything, you have identified yourself with an illusion. And that means your sense of self has become associated with thought movements, which is the illusion. And then the time comes, and I suggest it is now, it's not for everybody yet, but for you, it's now, when you can relinquish a position or allow it to be there without a self in it. Say, that's the position, and that's your position. Oh, okay. When you can relinquish defensiveness and realize you're still alive, even if you don't defend yourself. You are still alive, even if you are not right. And if you say, oh, yes, you are right, I was wrong. You're enormously liberating to suddenly say, oh, yes, that's how it is. And then already you a great freedom arises when you give up the automatic self-repair programs of the ego. And there's so much in this world that is could damage the mind-made self as you move through every day. You have to watch out continuously. Even the slightest remark from somebody can damage the mind-made self. And even when you're driving along, a driver shouting something at you doesn't feel good. You idiot, where did you get your license? Or the driver shouts something, and usually, and this is a very simple example of how one's self-image, mind-made, immediately jumps into repair, because that shouting, you idiot, has injured your mind-made sense of self, because you fear you don't want to, you're not an idiot, I'm not an idiot. And so immediately the self-repair thing is you shout something back, even louder perhaps. And on its own level it works, because you feel a little bit better. The damage has been repaired. You've shouted back and it's been patched up. Okay. The self is intact again, and so you drive on. And this is a little example. And how often do things like that happen through criticism, somebody telling you this or that, you're not, and then you get, occasionally you get the opposite, you lap it up, you say, you are so good, you're so great. The world may tell you that for a little while, until it changes its mind. But to observe the automatic self-repair mechanism that immediately come into place. And that, of course, can even degenerate in very unconscious people. In other words, people who are very much complete absence of a witnessing presence that need to be right. In very unconscious people, and there are many on this planet still, can degenerate into physical violence. Physical violence, even between nations, is the need to be right and the other to be wrong. Or when you're driving, you can see it as a phenomenon. I don't know if it happens in India, probably not, but in the West, road rage, where it's not confined to a physical shouting match, they actually get out of their cars and start physical violence. But it's simply a continuation of the self-repair mechanism. And so the final triumph in a very, very unconscious person, and there are many, is you have killed the other person. The self is now, the fiction, the illusion of self is now totally repaired. And then they put you in prison. But at least you've triumphed as the self. And at that moment, when you're engaged in automatic and unconscious self-repair, you would go to prison for the rest of your life just to triumph in that moment. It's all worth it, says the self. But then life is very generous. It then allows you 50 years of spiritual practice in the prison cell.